Welcome to the Silver Screen Podcast. I'm Jared Boomer.
And I'm Katie Gainey West. This is a podcast about movies and pop culture.
And today we are talking about a documentary on Apple TV Plus. This is still a Michael J. Fox movie about the life and career of Michael J. Fox. Of course, living with Parkinson's disease, has been a big advocate for Parkinson's research and raising money to try and just come up with a cure or be able to research a cure. So we will talk a lot about that documentary today that is on Apple TV Plus that we both enjoyed. We'll give you a little preview there, but a pretty solid documentary. So we'll get into that in just a few minutes. But first, we do have some news items, more news than last week. We did want to thank Brandon, though, for coming on, talking about Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. So very cool movie. Obviously, he's a big Spider-Man fan. So I wonder if he's seen it anymore in the theaters, because he had seen it twice when we recorded.
I know. He might be the number one fan. I did listen to the episode and laughed a lot. Just us talking, like you guys were talking about different shows. And I was like, but does anybody watch Sex and the City? And then you guys
fell on deaf ears.
Yeah. You guys were talking about something else. And I was like, are you asking if I've seen this film? No. It's just very funny. No, but he did a really good job. But he definitely has a lot of podcasting experience.
Yes.
I don't know if he's seen it. Didn't he tell us he was going to see it a third time, though?
I think so. I think maybe he said he was going to go see it one more time. And I wouldn't be surprised if he did go to the theater one more time to see it. So.
Yeah, I'll ask. But my signs point to yes.
Yes.
But thanks for being on the show, Brandon. You did a great job. We'd have you back anytime.
Thanks for Brandon coming on to talk about Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. So the next one's supposed to come out next year, but
yeah.
I don't know. We'll see.
I mean, don't know.
That seems tough to get it done before then. So another movie that got pushed back is the Avatar franchise. So Disney had some news today. They've got a new Star Wars movie that's coming out in December of 2026. That's all we know at this point, but there will be a new Star Wars movie in 3 years. And then Avatar 3 got pushed from Christmas of 2024 to Christmas of 2025. And Avatar 4 is now going to come out in 2029. And Avatar 5 is going to come out in 2031. So,
do you think there's any chance they'll just forget?
Yeah,
and not make them? Like, they'll forget about them?
I maybe hope so, because like I'll be almost 40 by the time 2031 rolls around.
Good
and I was
heavens.
Like 16 when this first one came out. So that's a long time. There's also a lot of Marvel changes. I'm not going to go through all of those. Those didn't change as much. Some things moved a little bit. Some things either moved up or got pushed back, but you can find it on social media if you're interested in seeing all the changes for Marvel. That kind of some of those moved around a little bit too. So that was Avatar news. And then also The Flash had its premiere and Ezra Miller was there, very surprisingly. Now, they did not let Ezra do any interviews. They just let them basically pose for photographs and then obviously watch the movie during the premiere. I saw they did release a statement. I didn't read exactly what that said, but I do know that they issued a statement basically regarding to their behavior and things. So it was interesting, though, that Warner Brothers had them at the premiere of the movie, since there's been so much talk with Ezra Miller. It's interesting that they decided to bring them to the premiere.
Agreed. I am glad you caught me up on that, Jared, because I had not heard anything yet about this. I am so anti-Ezra Miller. It's not even funny, though. And for those faithful listeners, we are probably not going to cover that, we're thinking, on the podcast. Both for just not wanting to support it, but I doubt it's going to be the best movie that comes out this year. Jared, I did text Brandon. He already responded. He has not yet seen Spider-Man a third time, but he put not yet, which leads me to believe it's definitely going to happen again. But anyway, thank you for the update on Ezra Miller. I do think it was wise of whoever the publicity team was to tell him you can't say anything. Just stand there and be weird.
Yeah, that makes sense that they would not let Ezra do any like interviews. So
right,
yeah,
right.
They did issue a statement about the misconduct allegations, and Variety has an article on that if you're interested in reading about what they had to say and some of, you know, just a recap of all the events that happened with them, because there was a lot of stuff that went on. So,
yeah.
Also, we did have some celebrities that unfortunately passed away. The day that we're recording this, Cormac McCarthy unfortunately passed away at the age of 89. Mm-hmm. He won a Pulitzer Prize. He wrote the book The Road, which is very, very popular, and also No Country for Old Men, but wrote a bunch of different books throughout his career. And I think, as far as I know, just passed away from old age at the age of 89. So,
yes, I have read The Road. I have not read No Country for Old Men, but I do think No Country for Old Men is such a great movie.
Yeah,
I watched it. Well, it was funny. On the way back, I had gone to go visit my brother in Spain. And when I was coming back, somebody in the aisle, like across the aisle from me, was watching it on TV on this international flight back. And it was during the day, so I wasn't trying to sleep. And I probably watched 45 minutes of this in silence, like didn't even just watch it on this guy's screen. And then I was like, I should just watch it. So then I turned it on and then I watched the movie. So I've seen it recently, but dang, that's such a good movie. Creepy, violent and all that stuff, but very clever. I didn't really like The Road, though, the book.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously a very talented writer and contributed to our American literature quite a bit.
And then also, Treat Williams passed away as well from a motorcycle accident, unfortunately, at the age of 71. Mm-hmm. Another actor that's been in a lot of stuff, too. So
I was on the phone with my dad last night when that headline popped up, and he said that there are more like motorcycle accidents with people over 40 than any like that more than young people. Or maybe it could be some statistic where it's like fatal accidents, not accidents, but like resulting in death. I don't know. But he seemed very well liked. I really only knew Treat Williams from the show Everwood, which I wasn't a faithful watcher of, but I knew him from that. But he's been around. He had been acting for a long time.
Yeah. Yep. So his first appearance in movies was in 1979. So yes,
dang.
he's been acting for quite a while. So rest in peace to him. And then also, of course, Cormac McCarthy. But then we do have some good news. Celebrity couple got married. Billy Crudup and Naomi Watts tied the knot. So congratulations to the both of them. They've been engaged for a while now and got married.
Jared, I was thrilled for this news. Like we all know Billy Crudup's on my list. I think he is so beautiful. You know, he's made his fair share of mistakes, but Naomi Watts seems wonderful. And they just like appear to be very happy together, and they're the same age, and they've lived a lot of like different, they've just had so many different experiences. This makes sense. And I really like when you see people who are in their mid 50s and they find happiness like this. And it was just cute. It was so low key. Like they just went to a courthouse. So sweet. They look really happy. So that was one of the best. That was maybe a happy highlight from this week for me.
Yeah, that was good news to see. So congratulations to the both of them. And that's all of our news for this week. We don't have any corrections, so we're on to recommendations. You can go first, Katie. I'll think of something to recommend. I forgot
Thank
to think
you.
Of something to recommend. So
well, we all know I've been a TV watching fool lately, but I kind of hit a plateau because we finished so many good series, Succession, Ted Lasso, some others. I did see on Netflix that I never finished the show Shameless, and I have three seasons that I didn't see. I don't remember why I stopped. I don't know if it was because it was on Showtime and I didn't have a subscription. I can't remember. But I'm committed now to watching the final three. I will say that show ended a couple years ago and I stopped watching, you know, before the final three seasons. It is a lot of it is in very poor taste now. Like that show was always questionable just because of like the family members and where they are and their a lot of like socioeconomic stuff that surrounds their family, but like there's a lot of off-color jokes, which is fine. It's really well done and well acted, and of course it was like such a popular show, so I want to see how it ends, but it's one that I'm kind of like glad that I don't have to pay a ton of attention to. I'm not super invested in the way I used to be with it. So I'm watching that. And then I have one book to recommend. I read this book in 24 hours. It is called Drowning, The Rescue of Flight 1421. It's by TJ Newman, who is an author. I think I mentioned her on the podcast because she's a female. I did not know she's a female. Super cool. She's written another book called Falling that came out. I want to say that book came out in COVID. And okay. I remember I read that one almost as fast, and it was a stunner of a debut. Like, it shot to the top of the New York Times list. People were obsessed with it. It was on all social media, and it was just a really good read. I think this book was almost as good as the first. I think it's always hard when a writer gets that much fame and fortune and notoriety for their first book. It's really hard to match it with the second. I thought this one was super good. I gave it like a 4.5. If I could give a 4.5 on Goodreads, because you can only do whole numbers. But if people liked her first one, I think this one was a great, great, great follow-up. And it's about a plane that takes off and it crashes within like the first 6 minutes of the flight. Okay. And it does this thing called ditching. So it goes in the water and they're stuck in the water. I won't ruin anything about the book, but the whole, I mean, it's almost 300 pages. So like, put it together. Obviously, people are not all going to die. There wouldn't be a book if they died within the first 6 minutes and the first 30 pages of the book. But if you like intense things, I wouldn't recommend reading this if you are getting on a flight, and I wouldn't recommend like that day. And I wouldn't recommend it if you have a deathly fear of flying. But I thought it was excellent. Really, really good. Again, that's Drowning. No, sorry. Sorry. I almost said it wrong. Oh yeah, Drowning. I was right. Sorry, I was thinking Falling, her first book. Drowning, The Rescue of Flight 1421 by T.J. Newman.
Very nice. That Thank sounds you. Very interesting, and I'll have to add that to my list. So it is interesting to me. I don't understand, since you can't do half... I just thought of this yesterday, actually. This is a Goodreads thing. Since you can't do half stars on Goodreads, how do books get like 4.2, 4.3?
I don't know. I thank you for bringing this up.
Like, this and one I has also, a 4.35.
Like,
so,
I'm not a developer. I have no background in developing. I know developers, but I think, is it really that hard to make it like possible for us to do halves? Because everything else lets you do that. So I don't get it. And even Book of the Month, when you rate the books, you can do loved, liked, or disliked. So it gives okay. you kind of like an even, you know, this was mediocre, this sucked, and I loved this book. And I feel like Goodreads, you can't, it's not really a good indicator. And I like Goodreads because I love the app and I reference it all the time, but I don't like the rating system, how limiting it is. And then I'm with you. I don't understand how we get like 4.3 and stuff. I don't know what to do with that.
Don't, if you are listening and you know how that happens, then let us know, because
yeah, we should get
like
Mandy
every,
on the case.
Yeah. Everything should be like a full or like a half number, but
right.
like, how do we get like 4.2, 4.3? That
I don't understand.
I do have one recommend. This is kind of related to a trip. Allison and I are going to Disney World coming up in a couple of weeks. And she got me this book on my Kindle, and I would recommend you read it on a Kindle because it's like a gigantic book. But it's called The Imagineering Story, The Official Biography of Walt Disney Imagineering. Now, this book is like 800 pages. I'm about halfway through it. It's very interesting so far. If you've ever been interested in the history of Disney theme parks or like attractions, things like that, that they've built, that they've worked on, goes into a lot of detail in those different areas and starts at the beginning, like with Walt Disney, and then has kind of just gone chronologically since the beginning of the book. So it's an interesting read, especially like if you're interested in theme parks or maybe you're going to Disney World. I just wanted to read it because I thought it would be interesting to read before our trip. So I have not finished it yet, though, but that review is based on like the first half of it, and the first half has been good, so I'm assuming the second half will be too. But again, it's a very long book. I saw it was at a bookstore, I think it was Barnes and Noble, and I saw like the hardcover version of it, and it was mm-hmm. gigantic. I don't think I would ever want to read like the physical copy, just because it's probably like 10 pounds. So
although part of that freaks me out reading that on Kindle, because I feel like I would feel like I'm never making progress on it either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yep. That makes sense. So,
but I've been using my Kindle a lot more, and I like it. My backlog though of books I need to read is insane. And last month I already told everybody on the podcast, I bought 7 books. Like, I have to slow down. I got to stop. Like,
yeah,
I have a problem.
Buy a bunch and then don't read them. That's my problem. Yeah.
Oh, so mine is I say I'm going to stop buying them and then I buy them, or I'm like, oh, well, they're spread out. And tomorrow I have 2 library books to go pick up. They're finally ready, which I'm excited okay. about. So hopefully next week I can talk about those.
Nice. Very nice. Yeah. The library is a great place. Just went there today. So got some more stuff. So
support your local libraries, everyone.
Yep. They're great. So very cool. Okay, on to our thoughts on Still, a Michael J. Fox movie released on May 12th, rated R for language. Again, this is on Apple TV+. It's an hour and 35 minutes. IMDb is an 8.2 out of 10. And then Rotten Tomatoes, critics 99%, audience 96%. Everybody really enjoying this. Box office, it has not been released in theaters, so there's no box office numbers for this one. The synopsis is follows the life of beloved actor and advocate Michael J. Fox, exploring his personal and professional triumphs and travels, and what happens when an incurable optimist confronts an incurable disease. And this is directed by David Guggenheim, who has done a couple of other documentaries as well. He was a writer and producer for Training Day, Waiting for Superman, and An Inconvenient Truth. And then in 2007, he won an Oscar for Best Feature Documentary for An Inconvenient Truth. I believe I have seen that and also Waiting for Superman. I think Waiting for Superman was about schools. Yes. Okay, I'm looking that up now. So, yeah, I've seen both of those, and both of those are pretty good documentaries, and this one is good as well. So continuing a good documentary streak. And then he's got three upcoming projects he's producing, including The Happenings and Navajo Police Class 57.
I remember when An Inconvenient Truth came out. That was such a big deal. And I would like to think it really made a difference on how we treat the planet, but I don't think it has. but I care about the material, and I'm really glad they made that film. Also, I do think his name is Davis.
Okay. Yes.
Not David, because I wrote it wrong. Jared, my apologies. Okay. You guys, I'm so sorry. It's Davis Guggenheim. I typed it wrong in the notes. But anyway, he did a fantastic job with this movie. This was just a weird thing I noticed on IMDb. He's married to Elizabeth Shue and has been for a long time. She is a famous actress. She was in a lot of things back in the day, but I recognized her name right away. And some of you might recognize her from some of her film work.
So we will take a break here on the show. We'll come back. We'll talk about our likes and dislikes and the cast, which is basically just Michael J. Fox for Still, yes, a Michael J. Fox movie. And we're back here on the Silver Screen Podcast talking about Still, the new documentary on Apple TV Plus about Michael J. Fox, starring Michael J. Fox.
Thank you, Jared. Michael J. Fox plays himself in this. Obviously, it's a documentary. He is, of course, a Canadian. It makes sense that he's so wonderful because he's from Canada. He's originally from Edmonton, which is in Alberta. He just celebrated a birthday, too, on June 9th, which was cool. He's best known for Back to the Future, Back to the Future Part 2, Teen Wolf, and the TV series, multiple ones, Family Ties, Boston Legal, and Spin City. He's won 5 Emmy Awards for roles in Spin City, Rescue Me, and Family Ties. He's also written 4 books. I personally have read A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Future. Great freaking title for a book, if you ask me. And then also No Time Like the Future, An Optimist Considers Mortality. I remember that one especially because I read that, I want to say it was 2020 because that year was obviously a mess. Mm-hmm. And I think I remember it was my last book of the year. So whichever year it was the last book I read. It was the 100th one I read that year.
Nice.
So I always try to read 100. And then just some things I did want to share. Michael J. Fox, long before this, has always been one of my favorite celebrities. He just seems very likable and very consistent. But also, my family, unfortunately, I think I've mentioned, but there is a history of neurological diseases in my family. So I knew this documentary would kind of ruin me. But also, it's very important that people who research this stuff and who raise money for it. So Michael J. Fox has had Parkinson's for over 30 years, which is unheard of, because usually people die fairly quickly. It's kind of like ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease. During that time, he started the nonprofit Michael J. Fox Foundation. It has raised over $1.5 billion for Parkinson's research. Parkinson's, by the way, if you don't know, this is from the National Institutes of Health. It is a neurological disorder that causes unintended stiffness, shakiness, and difficulty with coordination and worsens over time.
So we will get into our likes for this documentary. I think the first one, and you had this on the notes, and this was the first thing that I thought of too, is this is put together in a very interesting way. They're obviously interviewing Michael J. Fox in the present. They are also using film clips, interview clips, things of that nature from his past to kind of tell you the story from his past days when he was, you know, very prominent actor. And then also there are some shots and footage of another actor. You never see their face, but just to fill in some scenes if they were talking about a situation or describing something and they needed some visuals to show for that, they would use like another actor just to, like, if they needed somebody to run down a hallway or go up and down stairs or like get in a car or whatever the case may be with that. So I thought it was very interesting how they did like put this whole thing together. I think it still would have been interesting if we heard Michael J. Fox talking the whole time, but I think the fact that he's narrating, but we're seeing clips and things throughout his career really keeps you engaged throughout the entire documentary.
Yes, it was so clever, and I don't know what it's called. I've never known the term. You know how we see like Indiana Jones now, and we see Harrison Ford, and he's a different age than he is now. He's not in his 80s. Or we see like Carrie Fisher, who has passed away, but she'll show up in a Star Wars movie. So they did whatever that CGI or that magic is that they do in those films, they did that with Michael J. Fox here because they're showing him. Obviously, there's footage of him when he's young. He's been in the business for decades. But I thought that was really clever. And I liked too that they went, I didn't find it confusing either that they went back and forth in time. I thought that it was really well laid out and really well paced. So you understood when he was talking about like, this happened to me when I was 29 or whenever he was diagnosed, here's what I was doing when I was filming Back to the Future. And like Jared said, it would show like an actor that's kind of acting out some of these things. But I thought that was really clever and very interesting to watch. I didn't really want to look away and I didn't get distracted during this film.
So one thing that I got from this documentary is that Michael J. Fox has like an insane work ethic.
Insane.
And even now in his older days is still very active and wants to get out and do a bunch of things. But there's a part in this documentary where they're talking about how he's filming Family Ties and Back to the Future at the same time. So he goes to the Family Ties set in the morning and like afternoon and then gets picked up and goes and films Back to the Future and then goes home and sleeps for like 3 hours and then does the whole thing over again for a couple of months while they're making Back to the Future. So that was really just like, I was like, wow, he was extremely dedicated to his craft. Also, after he's diagnosed with Parkinson's, he continues to act and still be in a lot of roles for a very long time, even after that diagnosis. And obviously that would be a difficult thing to do as well. So really just like an insane work ethic and somebody that you can tell really loves acting and really wanted to be like in front of the camera, you know, and would do kind of whatever it takes. You were in that early in the documentary too, that, you know, he got roles when he was younger just because he looked very young, but he still had to work for those as well. So,
yeah, I didn't realize until this how short he was.
Yeah, me neither.
I have not been a person, I don't really notice people's height a lot, or I would say it doesn't deter me from people like dating and stuff. That never was really a factor for me. But of course, I'm very short. So maybe that's why it's just never crossed my mind. But I didn't realize how short he was. But one thing I picked up on, I think I knew this about him, but I noticed it a lot during this film, is how humble he is. About a lot of things. I mean, he clearly has a lot of money, clearly gets a lot of roles, but he was very humble about like this and honest, both of those qualities, about how this disease sucks and parts of this suck. I fall down all the time. I can't get words out, you know, but he continues, like Jared said, about that work ethic. It's insane. And the fact too, I like that they showed different people that have to work with him. He needs help, but I think it is so admirable when people ask for help. Like, I don't know why you wouldn't, but he needs help from like a speech pathologist. He needs help from different therapists, physical therapists that you see working with him in the documentary. And also you can see he really struggled a lot with figuring out if he should tell people about his prognosis or not. And he did eventually, but it had to start getting kind of bad. He tried to hide it. And initially I'd be like, why would you do that? But then I think I do the same thing with certain parts of my life. We now have social media and people are just expected to share everything on there. And that's not necessary. Or the people, you know, that you love and care about, that you want in your circle, they're going to know what's going on in your life. And it was crazy watching it that I thought, well, why would I expect him to share that with the world? That's his own private situation he's dealing with. But I do see all the good that came from him sharing, obviously sharing about it and being such a famous person, but a well-liked person, obviously has contributed to how much that foundation has been able to raise and the difference they've made in the research.
Another thing was, this documentary was pretty funny at times as well. Michael J. Fox is a very funny person. Even at the beginning of the documentary, he's like, all my life, I've never, even before I had Parkinson's, I've never been able to sit still. And all the like clips they show or him acting, he's just like bebopping around everywhere. And even his physical therapist is like, just slow down a little bit and you'll like you'll be more successful. So I thought that was interesting. And he's able to make fun of himself and kind of poke light at it. Obviously, it's a very serious disease that he's been dealing with. But
yeah,
he's able to still have, he still has his mind. And he's still able to be very funny. And he's been very funny throughout his entire career. And cracks a lot of jokes in this documentary as well.
Yeah, no kidding. And it was another thing that left such an impression on me was seeing his family interact with him. I knew he had kids. I knew he had four kids. Oh, and he talks about his family a lot. And he talks about, especially when he was filming Family Ties and Back to the Future. I think it's in A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Future. But both those books, I haven't read all four, but both those books were excellent. So if anybody wants to read them, they're both not very long either. But he has four kids. He does have twin girls. They were in the middle. But it was funny to see him interact with the kids because it felt so normal. It felt like watching scenes between my parents where they're teasing about, like, when you text, it makes no sense. Like, you're, or dad, I text you and then you don't respond for 4 days and I don't know if you're okay. And I laughed because I thought that's so cute in the context of, like, they're worried about their dad who has this disease. But also I was like, dang, isn't that all of us with our parents right now? Like, where have you been? My parents no longer, like, they don't even tell me if they're leaving the state or traveling. I tell them when I'm driving from Indiana to Ohio, like when I get home, I'm like, made it back safely, even though I'm in my 30s. And I'm like, why are you guys not checking in? I don't know where you are. What flight are you taking? I just thought that was so cute. And you can see 100%, I am convinced that his humor and his support system has significantly contributed to his positive outlook and gains with this disease and fighting it. He's been married to Tracy forever. I think since like 86 or something. I don't know the exact year.
It's been a while though.
They're magnificent. And I love their love story. I love when he talked about it. And it also showed me, I think it's maybe one of the most beautiful celebrity examples of a committed marriage I've ever seen. Because, you know, Tracy heard about this diagnosis that he had, Tracy Pollan, his wife, that he had Parkinson's, and she didn't bolt and she stuck with him. And I'm sure that's hard for her too, because I don't know that this was the life she envisioned. And rather than seeing it as a burden, she has stayed by his side, exactly, which is what people commit to in marriage. And then what was also beautiful, he talked about how he basically felt like he abandoned her at the beginning of their marriage. Which I thought was a humbling thing to say, mm-hmm. and beautiful to hear a man say. Because he was saying, like, I was getting famous. She wanted to be famous and was somewhat famous, but like, she had our kids and she stayed with them. And I was an alcoholic and running around and having these parties and all this other stuff. And she helped raise our kids. And he even brought up how it affected some of his kids. Like, his son Sam, he said, was mad at him because he wasn't home to like help him ride a bike and stuff like that. So, again, just humility and humor. And these beautiful relationships that he has. And you can see, I fully think that positively impacts people with some of these debilitating diseases.
Yeah, I was going to say kind of the same thing you just did, that the documentary is not afraid to highlight some of the maybe more negative aspects of his life or some of the areas where he was down or maybe not the perfect person. So that, like you said, the part with the children, I thought was very interesting. Him talking open and honestly about that. Obviously drinking. He had a big problem with drinking when he was younger. He was kind of a jerk to a lot of people just because he was like at the top of superstardom and he was so insanely popular. I mean, I was trying to think of like an actor that would compare now, like a young actor that's like very, very popular. I mean, Harry Styles kind of came to mind just with like
Timothy Chalamet.
Yeah, Timothy Chalamet probably.
But he's adorable and very kind of shy. Like, yeah, he's definitely not pompous.
Like, Michael J. Fox just had such a charismatic personality.
He did.
You see all the clips of him on like late night shows and interviews and things, and it seemed like, you know, he was just very happy to be everywhere he was. So.
Also, I know I shouldn't be surprised by this, especially in this day and age, but Joan Rivers, you could see he was on that show being interviewed. She said, who are you sleeping with? And I know people ask that question, or like, we'll see who's like leaving whose house in Hollywood. But I don't normally hear people today so pointedly saying, who are you sleeping with? To celebrities. And I was like, wow, that's invasive. And I mean, at least they weren't asking a woman, but I was like, what an embarrassing, like, if your parents are watching and stuff. And you could tell he was even like, you know,
yeah.
But he was at the, he was kind of like at the height of his popularity and stuff, mm-hmm. but still like probably not a question we should ask anybody on national yeah. television.
Luckily they've stopped doing that on late night shows and interviews yeah. and things. You know, usually they only address it if it's like official, like a dating announcement has been made, or somebody got engaged or had a baby, or, you know, something like that. So,
yes.
But luckily we've moved away from some of those more like invasive private life, questions. So, another like for this is, obviously we talked about this a little bit with our first like, but it's very well paced. It's very interesting to watch the whole thing, even if you know about Michael J. Fox and you know a lot of the movies and things that he's been in. It's edited very well too, and it's only a little over an hour and a half, which I think is a really good length for this documentary. I think it's, you know, they took all the time they needed to tell the story and they didn't use any extra. I was intrigued the whole time. I was interested the whole time. I wasn't like on my phone watching this, even though it was on Apple TV Plus. I think that's a sign of a really well-made, you know, piece of media, in this case, a documentary, when you can be invested and engaged, even when you're watching at home and there's a lot of distractions around you.
And I think documentaries do a better job of that. But I also think like that's exactly what you it lends itself to a shorter, I guess, like time slot. Like that seems to be very helpful because you're it's kind of like reading nonfiction, which I'm not dogging nonfiction. I do read it. It's harder for me, but usually that's because it's dense material. It's not quick to read for most people. And I think that documentary is kind of like the nonfiction of the movie world. But it's helpful to get those like 90 minutes or so of information because they're packing so much information into that sort of time or telling a concise story. And I think they did a really good job with that here.
One of the other things I thought interesting was just like when he got diagnosed with Parkinson's, because he was 29 when he got diagnosed with Parkinson's, so he wasn't even 30 yet.
Yeah.
And it started in his hand, and he like went and saw the doctor, and then they told him what it was, and he's like, no, this can't, you know, this is something old people get, like this is
right.
I can't have this, like that's not possible. And then I thought the parts that they showed, he was talking about how on TV shows and movies and things he would always move his left hand or have something
yes.
in his left hand to kind of distract you from the fact that he couldn't control some of those movements. And they showed clips of like him carrying a telephone or messing with pieces of paper or whatever.
Pen.
Yeah. Yep. So I thought that was very interesting to show those examples of some situations where he, you know, had the disease, but hadn't revealed it publicly yet, and how he tried to mask that in his acting.
Yeah. I did like that they showed that too. And I think just another thing that they, because of him being transparent, that was the word I couldn't think of earlier. I liked how transparent he became about the disease, because in the end, ultimately, like the last few minutes of this, he's showing that how sharing his story with people, like how that ended up benefiting him, how he ended up being able to start this foundation. And he really, another thing I liked, he didn't say it was bad that he didn't share it. He was just showing, when I did finally share it, this is all the good that came from it. And I've been able to live with this and do very well for myself. So I thought that was a beautiful message, a beautiful way to explain it. And he didn't need to apologize. So good for him that he didn't.
Do you have any other likes before we move on to dislikes?
No, this was a pretty stellar documentary for me. Like I have a hard time even thinking of things I disliked about it. It was darn near perfect for me.
I had one very small dislike, and that is I wish they would have just focused on his foundation maybe just a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
They do bring it up at the end, but I think it would have been interesting to maybe have just a couple of minutes on things that his foundation has been able to do, just going into some more depth there on that situation, or like if you're interested in donating to the foundation, here's how you can do that. Things of the obviously people can Google it, but I just thought that was the only area I felt was a little lacking, is because they bring that up kind of right at the end, and maybe Michael J. Fox didn't want that to be a big part of the documentary.
Right.
I don't know, but he's obviously been running this foundation for 3 decades now, and has, you know, raised over $1 billion for Parkinson's. So I just would have liked maybe just a few more minutes on that, and how the decision maybe that he came up with to start the foundation and some of the things that they've been able to do with the foundation.
I could contribute to that dislike because I think the only thing I was left wanting to know more information about is where we stand now with Parkinson's. Mm-hmm. Because I know every time I see a news clip or something pop up about, you know, we found this medicine or there's this trial or Michael J. Fox, he makes updates and stuff about them. But I would have loved to know at the end where that disease, like how he's doing with it. And then in general, like, this is where we're at with medicine and different technologies and things. And again, I'm with you, Jared. Maybe he just didn't want that information because it is his story and he's kind of going like, this is where I'm at this point in my life. But I think that's the only thing that I was like, oh, I would have really liked to know more about this. Or even like a credit saying at the end, at this time, this one medicine is in trial. We're hoping it's going to be released by the FDA or so. I don't know. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. So that would just been interesting to maybe get a little more information on that. But other than that, that was my only dislike.
Yes.
Everything else I really enjoyed about this documentary. So I think we're ready for our scores.
We are. And I think you went first for Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. All right. I'm going to go ahead. I'm giving this a 95. I really like documentaries when they're done well. And I think this is pretty exceptional. I obviously really like the subject matter. It's near and dear to my heart. And I really like Michael J. Fox. But I thought this was really well done. And there was only one thing I didn't dislike about it. So great job. I'm with the critics and everybody else on this one.
Yeah, I think I'm going to give it the same thing as you, a 95.
Excellent.
So, yeah, really enjoyed it. It's one of my favorite things that's come out so far this year. Obviously, we're definitely still like about halfway through the year. So there's a lot more to go. But I think it was interesting because it's about somebody that I already know a lot about. I've seen a lot of his movies. I'm obviously very aware of him and his diagnosis and things, but I still learned things from the documentary. I thought it was very personal and intimate, and focused more on his life living with Parkinson's as opposed to his acting career, which we all know, you know, that he was in Back to the Future and,
right,
you know, all that stuff.
Great movie.
We didn't need like 25 minutes on that. But, you know, I think it taught me something about him. It made me learn something about him that I didn't already know. And it's kind of just more of a personal look at his life and his career. So, and it's a great, you know, it is rated R, I think.
For language, because they do say the F word quite a bit and stuff, but.
Yeah, but overall, I mean, don't let that deter you from watching it,
right,
because it's very well made and it's very well done. So,
agreed. Really enjoyable movie. And you picked this one, Jared. So good job. Excellent choice.
Thank you. So you can follow the Silver Screen Podcast on social media at Podcast Silver on Twitter and Instagram. Search the podcast on Facebook and find our Letterboxd profiles in the description for the show, wherever you are listening. And up next, we will be reviewing the new Pixar movie Elemental, which will be in theaters very soon. And then after that, we'll be doing Asteroid City, the new Wes Anderson film. So with Tom Hanks, our boy. So
we haven't talked about him in a minute.
Well, we will talk about him in a couple of weeks and then on our next episode reviewing Elemental.
Until next time, we'd like to thank the Academy.